if you can laugh at it in a way, right? If you can kind of laugh it off, there's a certain levity to that. It takes the stigma away instead of kind of, oh man, I'm sitting and I'm depressed. That is the most powerful thing in the world, is at your worst, you know, in your most difficult moment, if you can just kind of laugh at yourself and the circumstances, I think it creates this incredible energy and resilience to say, it's not going to be the end of me.
You're listening to The Isaac Velez Show, a podcast that inspires high performers to reach new heights and be better than their best. My name is Isaac, and I'm best known for my performance coaching, elevating elite athletes and entrepreneurs to unlock their full potential. On this podcast, I sit down and share vulnerable stories on my journey, lessons that I've learned, and I bring on high performers as guests to unlock new insights and share authentic conversations about what winning really looks like. Let's dive into today's episode. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode on The Isaac Velez Show. Today, we are back again with the interview series where we bring on different high performers as guests to really talk about different aspects of entrepreneurship, personal development, and overall carrying out the impact we want to see. I think sometimes it's important that we kind of remember, you know, how do we tie the why and the how and the what? How do we bring all the things together from a brand perspective of a business, but also a personal level? I mean, what are we doing to, you know, acknowledge the fact that we need to be more authentic? We need to be more vulnerable with the people that we're serving. Again, business is a game of serving. If you really want to make an impact, it's about serving the customers. It's about serving your employees. It's really about building something that's a lot bigger than just one person. And today's conversation, I want to talk to someone who thinks along those lines, who thinks about what are the impact that we have on our team, that we have on our direct customers, and the families of those customers. Like, it's a lot bigger than we think. And oftentimes, we have more responsibility than we could possibly know. So today, I want to bring someone, have a great conversation. So without further ado, let me bring on Chase. Chase, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Isaac. It's good to be here. And amen to all the above of what you just shared.
Great. Well, to kick it off, why don't you just give the people a bit about your backstory and how you got to where you are today?
Sure thing. So little spoiler alert, not coming from traditionally a branding and marketing background, actually a storytelling background. Started my career as an independent filmmaker, writer, director, producer, and always had a love and a passion for the craft. But I found that led me down a path of how do I kind of share stories and the power of storytelling for brands and businesses and leaders that want to connect with people on a deeper level. So really that's kind of how I've always kind of colored and flavored, you know, my approach to business and branding. I've run a, you know, brand agency for the last 8 years, doing some business coaching and consulting. But at the end of the day, for me, my mantra is, helping people understand that they can do good and do well, right? They can profit with purpose. They're not mutually exclusive. So it's kind of a great path to be on.
So, you know, kind of going down that lens, and we talk about storytelling. I mean, what makes someone a good storyteller?
Well, I think first of all, as you already said, kind of vulnerability, authenticity, right? This is with any art, any craft. It's not being overly concerned with how the audience is going to perceive you. It's making sure it's coming from an honest and real place. Yes, you want to obviously engage your audience, but you don't want to placate and pander to them. I think storytelling at its core is really simplistic. It's in our DNA. I work with clients all the time that say to me, oh, I'm not a storyteller. I don't know what story to tell them. You do. You just got to bring it out of yourself. And good storytelling kind of follows really a consistent conceit. You know, who is the hero's journey? Who is the hero of this journey who you're speaking to? Oftentimes your client. You know, what is the pain, the problem, the challenge they're faced with? How do you, as kind of a guide, as a leader, as a business, help them overcome that? And then what are the stakes, right? Success and failure. So if you can kind of combine some of those core ingredients, it's not hard for any business, any leader to tell a story, regardless of what industry or vertical you're in.
Well, I think the funny thing is you hear a lot of people like, oh, I'm not this, I'm not that. Like, I'm not a great storyteller. Like, I don't know how to talk to people that way. I don't know how to speak to people's hearts. And I find it so interesting because it's like, you know, a lot of stuff that we tend to try to fix, even if it's in the business world, tends to start within. Like, there's a lot of these limiting beliefs out there. There's a lot of these, you know, self-imposed problems that really aren't problems. You know, a lot of times it's lack of practice, but most times it starts with a lack of belief. Yeah. And so, I mean, how do you think that, you know, entrepreneurs and people that want to tell their stories or tell their company's story, I mean, how do you think they start to overcome these limiting beliefs?
Well, I completely agree. I do believe that business development or even brand development has to start with personal development first. I do believe you need to work on yourself and your understanding. What is your purpose? What is your why? So that that can then inform and lead and guide all business decisions you make. To kind of overcome that hurdle, you know, to put it not so eloquently, you know, a late mentor of mine, you always used to say, you know, it's like getting naked in the steam room. So it's like, you know, no holds barred, not holding anything back, getting real and raw and a little bit vulnerable with yourself, your partners, your stakeholders, your team. And you'll be surprised how that flows pretty well. We're in this age, and we've been in for some time, where there is so much noise. There is so much content and voices out there vying for our attention. To try to follow everyone else's path, you're going to continue to get lost in that noise, that sea of sameness. What you need to do is honor your unique perspective on the world. Be positively disrupted, be divergent, be a little edgy if you can, because no one else can tell your story like you can.
Well, it is really fascinating, because if we study even the last, let's take maybe 80 years, and we talk about how marketing's been done, I mean, you talk about having these huge marketing agencies that would spend, you know, 3, 4, 5 months on a single campaign, like the words were to perfection, like even just the idea itself would spend so much time in production before they rolled it out. And you look at today and you have a lot of people, and a lot of it is just copycat. Like one thing seems to work and then everybody flocks to it. And I mean, I think we see this across time, but it's also so interesting seeing, and I think even from the lens of like filmmakers, especially like when you have someone that really does come from a creative background that does do something that's different, like they really realize that like, yeah, like you can have the greatest angles and the crispiest shots and stuff like that, but it really is all about the story that you tend to tell. Like we see like someone in the fitness space, like a Sam Solik, who doesn't have this editing flair, who doesn't have these cinematic shots. It's very mundane. It's very basic, but people relate to him. People understand him. And then now everyone's trying to copy him, but it's not necessarily about the style, but about the delivery of what is the story that you sell people. And also that, like, I think the more honest that you become, the more that you really step into the relatable aspect of the people that resonate with you the most. And so I think like a lot of people try to go into the social media space thinking that they serve one niche. But then when they create like a personal brand or a business brand that just talks about the things that they actually care about, they find that that niche isn't as rigid as they once thought it was.
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, to talk about kind of the fidelity, right, or the production value, the time it takes, I understand that well. And it was kind of at least a challenge for me in the beginning, where coming from a filmmaking standpoint, you know, it would take months, years to create and distribute and release a film, a television show, whatever it might be, right? There was that delayed gratification. And of course, you know, in filmmaking for the most part, you want good production value, good sound, effects, etc. You know, when I got into kind of the realm of digital storytelling and branding, this was kind of the dawn of YouTube, quite frankly, and working with influencers, you know, it became kind of an unlearning of those standards and best practices, because it doesn't have to be polished. It doesn't have to be the most high fidelity with the most expensive equipment. And in many cases, and the data supports this, is that some of the lo-fi content, most of it, outperforms the overproduced, overpolished stuff. People want that real, immediate, off-the-cuff sort of feel and vibe. And they can tell. Audiences are far more discerning than they ever were before. So I do think that immediacy is one thing. I think, you know, I think the authenticity of your content is another thing. But you're right. When you put out an authentic message, you'd be surprised how many different elements or different tribes you might attract beyond what you originally thought.
I will say, going back to one point, kind of like you mentioned just that saying about what your mentor told you about just getting naked in the steam room. I find it so interesting, you know, coming from a podcast perspective and doing this for, you know, for a decent period of time. You know, I recently started doing more vlogs. For the first time, like this year. And it's such a funny, because it's such a different experience. And like, I was laughing with someone about this the other day, because I was like, if you have social anxiety, I feel like vlogging is like the best thing any person with social anxiety could do. Because I feel like it's even worse than just speaking to random people, because being in the randomest place and just having just talking to a camera is the funniest thing. I honestly started to love it. But it is really interesting, because I've been like, I've been studying, you know, how actual filmmakers film themselves. Like, how do the professionals do it? And then it's like, I watch their stuff and I watch my stuff and I'm like, man, I love that. I love practice. Cause if not, like, it's so crazy, like how we think we're good at some things. And then you really try to do something even in a similar space. And you just see the vastness of like how much people really put time and effort into growing in a certain area.
Well, it's an interesting comparison because what we, you know, whether it's thought leadership or business owners or entrepreneurs are asking ourselves to do is be both in front of and behind the camera, which isn't the case, you know, in filmmaking for the most part. You know, you've got actors that are trained to perform to camera, eye lines, lenses, emotions, motivations, etc., line reads. And you've got your directors and your producers and your writers and all that behind the camera kind of, you know, setting up and staging that. We're kind of playing both roles. Right. We're asking to both create the content, write it, direct the performer, us, and then perform it as the actor. So it's a bit of an unnatural thing. But obviously, this has become the new normal, the commonplace for anybody that's on YouTube or TikTok or, you know, any content creator for that matter. I think it's great. I think it's democratized content creation in a way. But I also think there's a flip side to that, that not just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? Just because you can create a vlog and post it every single day just because you feel you need to get into the algorithm, unless you've got something qualitative to say or something new or original, maybe hold back a bit. I've always been a big believer in quality over quantity.
Well, I think it is also going back to the brand thing, like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to say? And I think that, you know, that's some of the things where if we sit down and kind of write down, you know, okay, like what is the purpose? What is the intention? I think it goes back to your point. Like when you focus and prioritize intentionality, you tend to start moving more towards quality as a natural byproduct of that. Because being intentional forces you to spend more time on the things that you actually care more about. And again, like going to like the vlog example, like, you know, what are you doing? Like, why would you need a vlog? Or why would you need to do short form content? Or why would you need to do this? And it's like, well, I just want engagement. Well, it's like, there's simpler forms of that if you really want that. But is it also like, should you be doing that in the first place? And because we think about, I mean, the movement of a herd and the movement of a crowd. And it's funny because, you know, the things that people hate now, they're going to love, they might love in 5 years. And the people things love now, they're going to hate in 5 years. Like we all hated, you know, we all loved cable because it was so simple. We paid one subscription for everything we wanted. Now everyone hates cable. And now everyone's mad because they have, you know, 20 different companies that they have to pay for to see the stuff they want to see. And now they're like, man, I wish it was simple. And that's what cable was. So it really is funny kind of seeing the movement and the trends of things. And it's also like, that's a source of inspiration, but we have to be careful not to get drawn too close to it because it really is something that is always changing. And when you have more so of an evergreen brand of like, you know, especially from the entrepreneurial side, like there are some entrepreneurs who like capturing their stories is really cool. There's a guy named Pat. He has this company called Starter Story, and he just talks about how different companies are built, different startups. And lots of them are, you know, low employees, just like doing really well because that's his kind of angle. And so he interviews these kinds of people and he talks about how he created his own business from a Starbucks. And I think it's things like that, like you're being super intentional because you can kind of link that all these different things that these people tend to do are all being intentional.
Well, look, I think this comes back to, as you said previously, the tendency for us, anyone as business owners, leaders, entrepreneurs, to follow trends, to try to do what others are doing that have had success, regardless of if it is right for you or works for you. And I think that intentionality, you need to listen to yourself. Is this something that I enjoy doing? Is this something I want to be doing? Do I feel comfortable in it? I'm all for pushing boundaries and growth mindset and getting out of your comfort zone. But this can also lead to burnout. If you're chasing everything that every single person is doing out there on LinkedIn or Instagram or TikTok, like you're going to burn yourself out. I think you need to kind of take a step back and understand, what am I good at? What do I enjoy, right? What is a natural kind of expression of my purpose? And lean into that. And that doesn't mean being on every social platform and posting, you know, 10 times a week. I've been a victim of that. You know, it's sometimes easy to try and chase trends, but more often than not, they're fleeting. I think you got to really kind of get clear with what of those you enjoy, what really relates to your audience, and what gives you joy in the process. And some, like I said, quality over quantity.
Where do you find yourself getting most of your inspiration when you, you know, do your own works for your business or when you do works for clients?
Well, it's getting in that flow mindset, which is hard to, you know, when you're busy, when you're rolling every single day and you got meetings and emails and all that kind of stuff, is making, forcing sometimes the time to get into that flow, right? Which really only happens when you are removed of distractions, of notifications on the phone, of emails popping up, of to-do items, oftentimes a quiet place, sometimes outdoors if I can. You know, the way I prime myself for that is either through sort of going on a run or meditation. That kind of quiets the mind and helps me focus in a little bit. But without that sort of preparation and without that sort of siloing of those distractions, it's really, really hard to do your best work and find that true inspiration. You know, I think whatever that means for you, whether that's meditation, going on a walk, getting some exercise, you've got to build a habit that's going to put you in the right mindset and the right frame of mind to do your best work.
Would you say that a lot of people also struggle with creativity because they're always involved in so much noise? I mean, even from a business perspective, like you're always worrying about all these different problems and issues that have to be solved. But even from a outside perspective, you know, social media, the news, music, podcast, audiobooks, that we're consuming so much information that it's kind of hard to have our own space to do our own kind of thinking.
I think that's part of it. I think that's absolutely part of it. When you're constantly kind of absorbing and being bombarded with information, how do you have the space and the time and the clarity, the singularity to create an output, right? We're just avid consumers. We're binging content wherever it comes to us. You got to kind of turn off that faucet a little bit if you're going to kind of come up with something original on your own. But beyond that, you know, the hesitation around creativity, I think there is kind of an innate sort of fear of judgment, of critique, of what are people thinking of me? Does it sound right? Do I look right? You know, we kind of live a little bit in that that world right now, especially driven by social media, where, you know, our schema is wired to think that we have to look and speak and sound a certain way to connect with our audiences. So if we can overcome that hurdle, that insecurity, that vulnerability, I think you'd be in a lot more authentic place to truly be creative if you are detached from the outcome, right? Not constantly worrying yourself about what are people going to think about me if I say something like this. It's more about how do I feel when I share that with my audience? And that's kind of really all that matters.
It's fascinating to me, the talk about vulnerability, because you know, it's one of those things that I don't think everyone describes necessarily in the best way. Like when they talk about it and, like, you know, be more vulnerable, like they don't, sometimes they talk about the emotional side, sometimes they talk about the openness side of things or the transparency or honesty part of it. And I just think that when we look to, you know, tell people and tell a world that likes to only show the good, likes to show only when the sun is out and not when the rain is out, like be more vulnerable, like the actions that we have to take are so, you know, they're so interesting because it does require us to have introspection and to go inside and to say, what's going on with my life? Like, what's happening? And it's also asking ourselves the questions of, why does the opinions of others bother us so much? I mean, really what it's about, because that's a really fascinating conversation to have with people. It's like, what is so wrong if you tell other people this? Is it that you don't meet their expectations? Is it that they think they're going to judge you? Is it that you think that the world is going to end? Like, it really is like, what to you is the big deal about opening up? And, you know, it's really interesting because I think an aspect of vulnerability is also asking yourself the question of, what do we do when we're faced with the judgment of others? What do we do when that happens? Because it's easy to act from positions of strength. It's easy to be, you know, when things are good, to share that with others because it validates us and it makes us feel like we're going to be more accepted. But I think that for some reason, you know, biologically, we've instilled in us that if we share weakness, that's when people are going to come after us. That's when we're not going to be as accepted. We're not going to be as loved. Like, we take the love as conditional because we also feel that the external gives us, you know, that sense of safety and security. And I think that that's sometimes a big mistake what people think. But I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole scope of the vulnerability argument nowadays?
Well, first of all, I think it's different for everybody, right? I think in general, sure, there we all form sort of a protective barrier around ourselves to protect ourselves from harm, from pain, from misery, from sadness. We all deal with that in our own ways. So I think, you know, that it, and some of that comes from nature, some of that comes from nurture. I do think that a big part of this sort of exploration, and look, some of it's conditional about where we live and how we live. It's not easy to get out of our own heads. It becomes what I feel back to a process of deep sort of self-exploration. I'm on a constant journey of better understanding myself so that I can kind of show up the best I can for my family, for my kids, for my clients, for my employees. And yeah, I get that we're in a little bit of this sort of overshare, vulnerability is, you know, is in vogue right now, but within reason, within context. It doesn't mean just pouring your heart out to anyone and everyone. It's simply understanding where your limitations are, having the resilience to overcome it, and find a little bit of what I think is kind of really the goal is equanimity. Equanimity, you know, being, you know, I can be okay, I can be stable, I can be steady, regardless of what the external environment is sharing with me. I think that is the pursuit, and how you get there is different for everybody.
I think it goes back to the same argument we talked about before. It's like, well, it's aligning, like, what is the purpose of being vulnerable? Like, really, what is the intention? Because for some people, vulnerability is a way to validate bad behavior. It's a way to validate not being in a healthy position. It's a way to validate not doing the hard work because life is difficult. But for other people, it's an opportunity for you to share something that could help them, that could guide people on a better path. Because it's like, I mean, like think about it from a context of like, okay, like something bad happened to me, I'm going to share with other people. Well, if you share with certain people and they sympathize with you, sympathy is, you know, giving validation to a bad position. Because they're not empathizing, you can get out of it, they're just validating that specific position. Mm-hmm. Another group of people can take it as, I'm not alone, other people are hurting, it's okay not to be okay, but it's not okay to stay there. And then it's kind of that optimistic hope, which again is going to be a powerful motivator to change the situation. And so again, I really do think it's like, it's one of those components, like you do say, it does depend on the individual, but it's also like the narrative that we put in society, you know, can be the wrong kind of narrative. Like when you mentioned here with vulnerability, like vulnerability isn't just spilling your hearts out to validate by position. It's a chance to connect with other people, realize that we're human, we've made mistakes, life isn't perfect, life is hard sometimes, but you know, as a community, we can have a hope for a better tomorrow if we can learn from the actions of today. But you know, that kind of brings me to the point of, we talk about, you know, this congruency of brand, what really establishes or creates a brand identity, you know, either for a business or for a person or both?
Well, I mean, just to touch on what you kind of shared a moment ago, I agree with you. There's a designation with vulnerability. There can be, you know, I don't necessarily think vulnerability is recording yourself sobbing, crying on YouTube because, you know, your boyfriend, girlfriend broke up with you, right? I think there's kind of a line there, right? Sharing just to share so that you can kind of then receive empathy or sympathy to kind of feel better about yourself. I think there needs to be a certain strength and vulnerability, like you said, to kind of open up and to let other people know that you are not alone, that we are kind of suffering from the same thing. I think there's a little bit of humanity and connection that we've lost over time that comes from that, right? You know, in terms of, you know, building that identity for a brand, it's really the courage to stand up for what you believe in, you know, to own and acknowledge and share your reason, you know, what is your reason to believe? What are your values? What is your mission? What is your driving central purpose? Which I just think is really kind of the North Star for any sort of business and brand growth and strategy. And again, that comes from personal development, right? I think you've got to get real with yourself and your team and your stakeholders to understand why we are in this, why it gives us joy and purpose. And that I think one needs to kind of lead that brand narrative, but it does come from a place of courage, knowing that you're not trying to be a one size fits all. You're not trying to appeal to everyone's preferences or perceptions. It's knowing that you might just find a single niche out there, but that niche, that tribe is going to resonate deeply with your message. I think this goes into a little bit of, we traditionally think about being in a certain niche to specialize in business. I think it's beyond that, because even a niche can be an overcrowded sort of sandbox. I think it's about category positioning, right? Finding new blue ocean, new space to position ourselves in an entirely new realm that might be uncharted, but we can be a leader in, right? And we have to kind of have the fortitude to stay the course and the courage to, you know, walk that path. And there's not a competitor to look to and say, how are they doing it? We're charting the course ourselves. And I do think that consumers and stakeholders in general respect that. They want that. People want to buy from, work for, invest in these sort of values, purpose-driven sort of companies with a clear and discernible message.
What do you think what do you think helps give courage or helps give strength to, you know, an entrepreneur that decides to be a trailblazer, that's willing to go against the grain, that's willing to, you know, let these values drive, but also go into the uncharted territories? I mean, what do you think helps people, and even what's helped you in times of uncertainty, to kind of see, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel?
I think the, not just saying it, but the acknowledgement that failure is key to the process. You have to be willing to embrace that, you know, to stumble, to trip, to fall, to fail in that pursuit, and yet keep getting up and trying again. That resilience, I think resilience at the end of the day is, you know, one of the greatest kind of qualities and skills we can have in life and in business. So I think having that is absolutely essential. For me, you know, there was a time in my life where that used to be my biggest fear, failure. Right? Think I'm failing at something. What does that say about me? What did people say about me when I fail? I had to overcome that. I had to overcome and embrace it and stare it in the face and say, you know what? Failure can be a great thing. It can create great opportunity to reflect, to iterate, to pivot, and kind of continue on. So I think the only way you're going to kind of get there, and a lot of entrepreneurs are built this way, but not all, is, you know, running through a wall and pursuing your vision, regardless if, you know, you're getting 99 no's, but you know that there's that kind of that 100th yes out there somewhere. Staying power for, you know, for me, for anyone, I think is the greatest quality in any business, where a lot of people will give up or they will acquiesce when things are tough. How can you stay the course? I do believe if you trust the process, it'll certainly pay dividends.
How do you think that, you know, over the years, over your, you know, your own changes in your life and the changes of your business, I mean, how has your relationships, you know, with friends and family kind of shifted over the years as you've kind of gone more down and down, you know, the path of entrepreneurship?
It's a good question. I think it's impacted my immediate family, like my relationship with my wife and kids, learning, and I'm still in this season, you know, how to create and set and honor healthy boundaries. Boundaries for myself, boundaries with work and life, and how do I balance that? When you're an entrepreneur, there's a tendency to always be on, right? There's no clock out, even if you're on vacation. It's kind of always running in your head. I think you need to kind of learn to build and set those healthy boundaries where you're not picking up your phone the moment you get a ping or an email. You can be sit there and be present with your kids and not worry about, you know, putting fires out. I think that's been a big part of it. It can also be a little bit of a lonely endeavor. You know, in my family, I'm probably one of, if only, the only sort of entrepreneur, if you will. Most of my family, brothers, cousins, etc., are in a more traditional sort of job. Steady paycheck, steady career, and very, you know, some are very, very successful, and that's great. But it's hard to have that connection when they're not in the trenches every day, knowing that they have to play the role of, you know, sales and biz dev and accountant and strategist and all these different things. That's why I think we need one another in this community to kind of communicate. So for me, it's boundaries. I think it's hugely important. And I also think another word that used to be a very no-no word for me is surrender. Used to thinking of surrender as, well, you're quitting, you're settling, you're letting go, right? I think surrender with intention is important. Not having to have that vice grip 24/7 on controlling anything and everything in your path, being able to let go, trust the process, do what you feel you can do best, and let some of it play out as it should.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's probably one of the biggest things that I've been reflecting on probably for the past couple of weeks is just the whole, you know, idea and dichotomy behind control. I mean, what we choose to believe is in our control, what isn't, wanting to be in control of the variables and the outcomes and the expectations that we have for things, and creating these extensive and elaborate plans, thinking that, again, all these things are under control when a lot of times they aren't. And it is a lot of times having, in a sense, faith and also blind faith, and being able to trust in the work that we do and you know, and the good impact that time will only tell. And sometimes that's, you know, that's also not just learning to handle control, but it's also learning to have such large amounts of patience. Yeah. And also, you know, having, again, like we talked about, that resilience, because, you know, especially the path of entrepreneurship, but even the path of just wanting different things for yourself, that puts people on a path, that puts people on a journey of a little more of isolation by the mere nature that less and less people choose to do that. And again, that's kind of where it's like, it's not even that we like by nature we try to isolate, but by nature, the people that have the relatability, kind of like you mentioned, just being able to relate on those experiences becomes less and less as you continue to move towards that path. And so it's sometimes also too, like, you know, how do you protect the peace of mind? How do you protect, you know, boundaries? Because oftentimes, you know, it is going to be a matter of, there's going to be periods in your life, if you want an entrepreneur sort of life, to where you're not going to have balance. And that's not going to be an always thing, and it should never be an always thing, but there are those moments, because that's kind of one of the prices that has to be paid in this game.
I agree. I think we need to understand and learn, and this is a constant learning pursuit for myself, is, you know, in many ways, it's operate in decades, not days. You know, I've reached burnout multiple points in my life and my career because I felt that every day of every season needed to be this kind of, you know, 100 miles an hour, balls to the wall. Like, if I'm not progressing at this exponential pace like everyone else around me, I'm falling behind or taking steps back. And that's really not the case. I think you got to operate in seasons. There are seasons that, you need to kind of be on and really hustling. There's seasons where you can kind of reap and kind of refresh and restore. There's seasons for kind of nurturing and sowing kind of new opportunities. So, honoring that and really listening to yourself, what you need, not what, the rest of your, you know, the rest of the community or society is reflecting upon us. It's different for everybody, but the one constant is understanding to have a little bit of patience and grace with yourself. And what I truly feel is sometimes you have to slow down first in order to speed up. And, that's something that we don't always give ourselves a little a patience for. If we're not constantly at it at a frenetic pace, we feel we're falling behind.
How would you say that you've bounced back from burnout in the past? Like, I mean, like you feel burnout, like you really reached that breaking point. Like, you know, what is that feeling like in those next following days? And what do you do to kind of restore yourself back to, you know, where you want to be?
Yeah. The cool thing is, you know, how you're making progress, is with each successive period that you reach sort of a little bit of that, call it burnout or just exhaustion or just kind of frustration or a block or you're feeling stuck, how quickly can you rebound successively from that, right? That's kind of how I measure it, right? There'd be times when I hit a wall and, you know, for a week I'm just in a mental state where I just can't bring myself to do anything. Okay, and there's some that, all right, a couple days or maybe a day or, you know, even better, a minute, a moment, and I can catch myself, I can check myself, get out of that overwhelm, you know, have a little bit of objective opinion, almost kind of sitting on top of, you know, myself looking down, and then react and respond accordingly. I think that's a great way to measure how quickly, how resilient you can be from those obstacles. But a big thing for me that, you know, how I rebound from it, so to speak, is stepping away, is getting space, having quiet, meditation, really taking care of me, nurturing me, which, you know, we abuse ourselves in a daily affair, unless you're taking care of yourself. So I think don't wait till you get to that burnout stage, making sure you're implementing those kind of behaviors, those practices that, you know, fueling and filling yourself on a regular basis so you don't have to reach that point.
What do you think's maybe a tendency that you tend to do too much of or too little of that, you know, as you continue to grow and develop that you would like to eliminate more? You know, like what is something that you think is one of, and I wouldn't say necessarily like a super negative vice, but just a habit that you would prefer to do a little more or less of that you currently don't?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this is the case with a lot of people, but I'm my own worst critic. You know, I don't always give myself the patience and the grace and honoring what I truly need. You know, working with clients, there's a bit of that people pleaser mentality. There's a bit of that, you know, achiever growth mentality. You know, always wanting to kind of do more, do better. Kind of continuing to kind of up that bar of success. I think learning to celebrate and own some of the wins, as small as they are, milestones, so you can feel it, so you're not in this constant state of endless pursuit to no end. You got to own those milestones. You know, I think that this really does come down, like I mentioned to you, having it a bit of patience and grace for myself and my own path. Someone else's path is not mine. Not getting caught up in that cycle of comparison and judgment and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, right? What do they have? How did they get there? You know, why am I not there? We can really beat ourselves up mentally, emotionally, if we are trying to chase anyone else's path or pursuit or lifestyle. We got to understand what works for us and honor that.
You know, it's kind of that line from Dr. Peterson. He says, you know, treat yourself as if you're responsible, like as if you're a friend, you're responsible for helping. Yeah. And it really is that idea that sometimes it is about having more compassion and grace with oneself. And, you know, even just thinking about how we walk those lines to achieve it, I mean, it's different for different people. You know, for some people it is, and for a lot of people it is handling those insecurities. For other people, it's the pain and disappointment of not being where we want to be. For other people, it's, you know, the expectations that we set that don't meet what actually happened in reality. And so in a lot of ways, it is a lot of growth and self-reflection. But in a lot of other ways, it's also the structures that we put ourselves in. You know, like if we put these impossible goals on ourselves, like we're going to constantly be in a point of undershooting those goals and missing what we set for ourselves. If we constantly put, you know, factors that are outside of our control as our fault, we're constantly going to be feeling like we're not doing well enough. And I think there is something to be said about, you know, shooting for, you know, a certain like height of goal, certain height of vision. But it's also like kind of what we talked about. It's a mixture of how do you bring things from a vision perspective into a moment perspective. And I find that it's like, well, if you want to shoot for the stars, you build kind of a path to the stars, you make a plan for the day to day, and then you just focus on the day to day and forget about the stars. Mm-hmm. Because that way, again, you're building the structures that lead you there. But if you land on the moon, you're still happy because you know that you kept and kept going. And it's also about building sustainable structures that, again, you know, sometimes there are those short sprints where you really just have to do the work, and it might be 2 or 3 weeks of intense labor. But, you know, for a lifetime, it really is about the sustainable structures. What's like, you know, let's like, okay, I want to build a 500 employee business. Okay, cool. How much time do you want to spend with your family if you got 3 kids? Because it's, again, like the bigger the company, right, the bigger the problems of the company. You know, like I've talked about this idea before. Like if you want to say you're a Fortune 500 CEO, you're not free. You got shareholders you're responsible for. You got all these things that if you don't perform next quarter, you're voted out by the board and you're replaced. And so it's like, you know, you talk about the status there, but you also talk about what's the price that we pay. And sometimes it is about going back to the purpose we talked about. And it's like, what are you actually called to do? Because, you know, we talk about the things that we want, but we don't always talk about the prices, not just monetarily, but the sacrifices that have to be made in order to get to certain positions. And sometimes it is that reality that creates a refresher of like, okay, what are you willing to sacrifice for? What are you willing to give up? And, you know, what are you willing to do and risk for the kind of life and outcomes that you say you want?
Well, I think that is important. I think you have to constantly, when you're kind of setting your definite major purpose, right, as Napoleon Hill says, or these goals, you have to think of the flip side. What are you willing to sacrifice in that process to really pursue that? But I think even more importantly, when you're setting a goal, when you're setting a vision for yourself, ask yourself why. Why do I want this? Why is this important to me, right? It's very easy for people to set these quantitative goals. I want to make $1 million. I want to create a 500 person business. I want to this X, Y, and Z. Okay, great. Or I want to grow 20% in revenue this year. Great. Well, why? Why is that important? Why is that essential, right? And I think, you know, without that driving why, that driving purpose, that pull statement, over time, you're going to find that it becomes a chore. It becomes burdensome to achieve that goal versus enjoying the pursuit. Like you said, you know, shoot for the stars, great. But if you have no interest in achieving there and you're just doing it because it's a goal and you're challenging yourself, how is that going to feel day to day when you are grinding, when you are hustling for weeks, months on end? You'll burn out or you'll kind of lose sight of it. I think you got to really think deeply about why you're setting this goal, why it's important to you, how it's going to transform your life, and maybe even add to the greater picture. Where am I going? That definite major purpose in life. How will this particular goal or set of goals help get me there, but still remain aligned with my beliefs, honoring myself, what I enjoy, what I'm passionate about? You know, just kind of really having that sort of vetting of goals before you just jump right in.
And I think it's too, it's also like the willingness to even risk being wrong, you know, because a lot of times, like, there's like so many of us, I mean, really all of us, like, regardless of what we've already done, what we've accomplished, what we've learned, like, there's a lot of stuff that we always have to figure out. And that's kind of the beauty of life. Like, if we can not let our ego take control of our lives and always be a student of life, we can always be learning, we can always be improving. Like, it really is a game that's to be enjoyed. Like, everything's not going to work the first try. And oftentimes for the people that it does work the first time, like, they tend not to enjoy it, be grateful for it, or not even keep it because they don't have the character that's been developed of the tried and try and try. Because when you really commit to something like this, like, it really is about the actual process and the journey. And I think, like, you know, one of my favorite, I think, opening pages of a book was The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, just talking about this experience of just like all this pain, all this suffering, all this darkness, and the biggest light of hope was just in that moment. And it really is all that we're given. I mean, we talk about, you know, what the Bible talks about. We talk about a Roman emperor, Marcus Aurelius, talking about meditations. We talk about modern authors like Eckhart Tolle. Like, what do they keep saying? Like, it is about the moment. It is these 60 seconds, these, you know, 30 seconds that you really have. And it's like, I mean, I think about too, like, it would suck if your last 60 seconds was, you know, caught about worrying about something that was never even going to happen. But it's like, you know, do we take those moments to, you know, do the things that we love to do on the business or in our careers, doing the things that we love to do by spending time with our family? And it also is looking at the mistakes of our predecessors and the people we admire. You know, like, what's the one of the most common patterns we see with people who have led very successful lives in a very objective manner? They always talk about the regret of, I wish I spent more time with my family. Yeah. Like, there's not really one single successful person that I remember listening to that you know, made it to the end of their life or was nearing their deathbed and was like, man, I wish I made an extra, you know, 10% of my income. Like, that's not something that happens. And it's like, you know, why do we follow in the same patterns and mistakes of our predecessors when we know the answer? And sometimes it's about, you know, having that courage, like we talked about, and having that vulnerability to say, you know what, like, am I even being who I want to be? Am I doing the things with the people that I want to be doing them? Because it really is the question of, what is it all for? Like, at the end of the day, what is it all for? And sometimes, yeah, it is about pushing through and having a little bit of steel in you, because life is hard and there are going to be times where you do have to keep pushing through. But oftentimes it is also having that reassessing lens, especially after periods of burnouts, but even before you get there, like, what am I actually optimizing for? What have I been spending my time working towards, you know, all these years?
I think it's important to, yeah, look, a lot of people kind of get on autopilot from the moment they are raised as kids to kind of look at a certain level of success. It takes a certain type of person, a certain type of path. I mean, you know, we're raised and we're nurtured, especially in kind of Western society, to think and operate in that way. You have to follow this particular track. You have to, you know, college, grad school, etc., you know, work, you know, 60, 70, 80 hour weeks. We have these preconceived notions of what success is supposed to be like in that journey without really second guessing and qualifying, well, okay, well, does that work for me? And you're right. A lot of people kind of get to the end of the road with these regrets. I think part of it is, and you know, I love the way, you know, the Joe Dispenza book kind of positions it as breaking the habit of being yourself in a way, getting off that sort of mental track that you've always operated on and being able to say, wait a minute, you know, this is what I've always known. This is what I've always thought and believed. But what if there's a different path? Or what if I was maybe wrong? Or maybe if this doesn't serve me anymore? That's really hard, because to rewire your behavior and your pattern, your way of thinking about this has always been my pursuit since I was a little kid, well, maybe that's going to change instead of just blindly following it because I set this kind of arbitrary goal. You know, people change careers and paths all the time. And I think it takes a lot of courage. I think it's a lot of courage to take a step back or take a pause. You know, I'm kind of, you know, I've been through that in different seasons of my life where, you know, building a business, you know, and look, I knew I never wanted to kind of build a big agency. I knew I was wanting to kind of have something, you know, more kind of moderate and boutique. But I was at certain points in time still lacking that why. Okay, well, what am I in it for? And what is that purpose? And unfortunately, kind of getting to a point of burnout and failure personally, financially, etc., you know, was a bit of a wake-up call and needing to kind of put two hands on the wheel and just stop being on autopilot and saying, this is what I'm driving for. And also knowing that that can still change and that's okay at different stages of your life.
No, that is one of the fascinating things about plans. Like, I mean, I even think about what we talked about briefly on the phone the other week, and even just like what I've been processing this last week. I mean, you know, about a week ago, like I ended my relationship ended with a partner that I thought I'd spend my life with. And, you know, there's like, obviously like a lot of things you process during that time, but like one of the things that's been fascinating for me to even just think about is that aspect of control, is that aspect of like, when you have all these things that you have planned, that you have think, you know, you create things based on the expectations of how you think things are going to unfold. And it's like, when that is shaken, when that is changed, when that's no longer what is going to happen, it really does make you wonder, like, you know, what are the things that I have been doing? What are the patterns that I commit to? And it's interesting because, you know, given like my age, like with the youth that I have, like there's so much left for me to discover and for me to learn and for me to really appreciate about this world. But it's also the matter of like the past 4 years have been so fascinating because, you know, 4 years ago was really when I started my whole personal development journey around the same time. And it's like, it's amazing to see just the overall changes that have just happened in the past 4 years alone. And the people that I've met, the person that I've become, you know, through all the trials and tribulations, and, you know, the levels of happiness and fulfillment that I've reached, and kind of, again, reorienting myself and saying, like, for the first time in my life, I finally feel like I'm just in the right place. Like, I finally just sat in everything and just admitted to myself that I've done well. And by no means does that mean the job is finished. And by no means does that mean I have reached everything that I've wanted to reach. But it is an acceptance again, and a surrendering, like we mentioned, like it is surrendering to a current that's larger than myself. And, you know, I'm a person of God, so it's surrendering to the current of God. But even for people that don't believe, it's surrendering to a force like fate or karma or science. It's surrendering to the fact that you don't control everything. Not everything is about you. Not everything will happen the way you think it will. And, you know, like we know these things, but oftentimes we don't apply these things, or we think that we do know better. And I just fell victim to that. And it is very refreshing, because I think that if we can come from the right places, situations like the one I just happened to, but situations that happen to people like us all the time are such great opportunities for growth. And it is exciting for me to see what's next. And it's exciting to just sit here in the day-to-day, sit here talking with you and just be here in the conversation because I know it's part of a bigger mission. And it's fine for it not to make complete sense now. And for the first time, I'm okay saying that. So again, it really is about, are we sitting in? Are we processing? Are we being a student of life in everything that happens? Not just when it's convenient, not just when we're winning, but also when we're down, also when we're in periods of loss. Like, can we honestly say that? Because it's a lot easier to, you know, get in a pool that's heated, that, you know, we dip our feet in and it's nice and warm and we see a little bit of steam coming off. It's a lot harder to get into a freezing cold pool. And a lot of less of us are willing to do that. But I think it's in experiencing all that, that we really do get the full human experience. And that's the whole, again, benefit of being able to have that courage to go through, you know, both the day and the night.
Yeah, I mean, amen. And obviously, whether it's what you've went through personally in your life previously or this podcast and this pursuit, I mean, you know, question for you is if this was the last podcast you recorded, would you have peace with that, right? Or what would you do next? I mean, I think it's a matter of, you know, these things that we do, they don't define us. They're other kind of stepping stones in our journey and our pursuit. But, you know, it sounds like you're doing this because you're passionate about it. You love it. It's part of your journey and connecting with other people. But if it stopped today or stopped tomorrow, I don't think this would derail you from your journey, right? You would find another outlet, another exercise, another output to continue to kind of nurture that for yourself. You know, and that's resilience, right? Is this one thing that I thought was going well, you know, my partner that I was going to be with for life, or, you know, this podcast or this business. Well, you know what, maybe it took a detour. How am I going to respond to it? If you can laugh at it in a way, right? If you can kind of laugh it off, there's a certain levity to that. It takes the stigma away instead of kind of, oh man, I'm sitting and I'm depressed. That is the most powerful thing in the world, is at your worst, you know, in your most difficult moment, if you can just kind of laugh at yourself and the circumstances, I think it creates this incredible energy and resilience to say, it's not going to be the end of me. And I think that does wire your brain to treat these sort of missteps in a different way. It's a learning pursuit. It's not always easy. You got to catch yourself in the moment. But that's why we're doing this. That's why we're having this conversation, right?
Yeah. No, it's really funny because I think about what you just said, like, because even, you know, we talk about the Greek response and the Stoic response was always to laugh at adversity. I mean, I remember that, I think it was the 300 movie that talked about the legend of Leonidas and the, you know, Spartan warriors that laid down their life to slow the Persian army. Like in the movie, like they all laughed at the fact that they were all going to die. Or even I think about Gladiator, which talks about, again, another Roman battle. And it talked about, like, if you see, you know, the crops that you're going to go back home to, well, you know you're dead, and like you're already dead anyways. And they all start laughing. It really is about, can we laugh in the face of adversity? But I think something else that you mentioned, which I think is beautiful, is your business isn't your identity. Your relationships aren't your identity. Your health isn't your identity. Like, your identity is an all-encompassing thing of, again, a story. Like, the hero isn't the same story. There are people that come into a hero's story and they're only meant to be there for a chapter, not the whole book. And it's sometimes like we have to put reminders on ourselves for those kinds of things because, you know, just approaching it from my own angle, the relationships, like, you know, something that a mentor said to me, which I thought was a great concept, but it applies to every area. Like, a great love story is not a life story. A great business story is not a life story. Like, just because something was doesn't mean it was there forever. And that doesn't mean that someone failed. I mean, like, if you had a business that didn't work, you haven't failed at life. Like, it is something that brought you, it was something that was part of your journey. Like, as long as you don't stop in life, and I don't mean stop to pause and reflect, but as long as you don't quit in the overall thing of, like, just giving up on life itself, like, you really don't, you're never failing. You're just learning. You're going through things. Like, you are always building towards the path that was always meant for you. So I think it is also that acceptance part of like, hey, like not any one thing in life is ever going to define you. Not your religion, not your community, not your family, not your relationship, not your business. And so it's like, now that we know that it's bigger than just one thing, what are we going to do? And, you know, how are we spending time? And again, it is that audit of our lives. It's our audits of our thoughts and an audit of our habits. And it's like, you know, if today were my last day, if this was it, like, have I committed myself to not necessarily have everything I want, because that's expectations and outcomes that I can't control, but do the things that are getting me towards that better path and that purpose that I'm called to serve, you know?
Yeah. And I do think that goes back to, you know, something I love to, you know, kind of rely on as a mantra is trusting the process, knowing that I've done everything in my power, done it the right way, tried to be the best version of myself and with my capabilities, and then letting the rest go, trusting in that process without maybe a clear or certain ideal of what that end game and that destination is going to look like. You know, it's kind of the way we typically, and I used to kind of think of success as kind of climbing this summit, this mountain. Right. Okay. Well, great. What happens to get to the summit? You stop, you look around, you're like, all right, now what? Where's the next, you know, higher summit? Instead of kind of looking at it, that sort of constant upward trajectory, it's more of this kind of path with peaks and valleys and dips and rocks and some water features. You know, it's more of just kind of a trail and you know, embracing the fact that the journey is the reward. But, you know, back to success or failure, you know, failure is a great opportunity for feedback, right? It's not finite, it's fluid. So look, all of this easier said than done, but the more we talk about it, the more we implement it, the more that we kind of really try to own it and let it rest within our subconscious, the more kind of, you know, resilient beings we become. Journey is the reward, man. I mean, you know, that's whichever shape and form it takes, because sometimes it'll knock you to your knees, and I've been there. But I'll tell you, in some of those lowest moments, there's kind of been a laugh. There's kind of been like a, you know, looking up to the sky, to the heavens, whatever, and saying, this is not going to break me. And there's a certain sort of confidence that comes from that.
Well, I think in those moments too, like, it is sitting in the fact that, like, okay, like, I'm down, like, I'm not doing okay, like, this is a hard moment. But I think laughing is one of the greatest remedies to that, because it really just kind of like, kind of gives you appreciation just to like live in the moment and really accept things for as they are, not as we want them to be. But it also is like, imagine the flip side. Like, imagine what the ideal that you say you want would really look like. And that's, you know, let's say you're born to the wealthiest family. You have everything you could ever need, and certainty is guaranteed. Everything you want is certain. There's no risk. There's no change. There's nothing.
Mistakes. Yeah.
There's nothing to compare the good to. So what do you have? An unfulfilled life with everything being handed to you. And there's no glory to it. There's no meaning behind it. Like, we would hate to read a story like that. The stories that we favor the most are stories of adversity. Even the stories about, you know, superhumans. We talk about like a Superman, like his story, right? His father dying, you know, losing his people. Like, we love the idea of Superman. He's invincible to humans. But yet he goes through adversity. Every Disney movie, even old classics and epics like the Iliad and the Odyssey. Like, all this is about what we become through the adversity. And it really is what gives us appreciation for the good. I mean, it's the whole idea of like, you can't have the day without the night, the light without the dark. Like, they're not opposites in the way people think. Like, they go together so key, because we need the ups and downs to appreciate things. And it really is what being human is. Like, being human isn't always being up here 24/7. And it's also an admiration aspect of like, things went bad. What are you going to do about it? What can you become out of this? And then when you get to that position is 10 times better just because you've gone through that building process. And you're also like, you have that pride and that sense of you've done well when you look at your character and what you've chosen to do out of circumstances. And it really is how you find peace of mind. It is how you find fulfillment, because those things don't come from easy. They come from living a life of hard choices and sacrifices, but sacrifices that are also meaningful and put you on the best path.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, once you've gone through that, once you've gone through the fire, you know, you've crossed that threshold, the precipice, sit there, acknowledge it, own it, like really let it in. Not just constantly, I made it, what's the next hurdle? What's the next goal? I don't think, you know, many of us don't give ourselves enough kind of credit for that. We kind of go through life thinking, okay, great, I've made it through this period or this challenge. You know, what's the next one going to be? You know, honor yourself in having gone through that. And that it's different for everybody. But yeah, and it also comes down to stakes, right? Talk about storytelling, any good film or story, whether it's the Iliad or a Marvel movie, would be flat, would be uninteresting and uncompelling if there weren't stakes involved, right? Whether it's your own personal stakes, live or die, the stakes of the world, stakes of, you know, the people you love, the community, etc. You know, what is that pull of potential success that could be if I make it through, if I push through and I have that resilience? But also, what is that motivating potential failure? If left unchanged and unchecked, and I just kind of continue to kind of coast on this continuous predictable path in life, well, where am I going to feel in 10, 20, 30, 40 years, right? I think a great measuring stick, and I've heard this a couple times, is don't kind of get caught up in yourself at this stage of life right now, but think about your 8-year-old self and your 80-year-old self, and what would make both of those people proud, right? When you're 8 years old and you're thinking about your life that you're about to kind of build and lead, what would make you proud to reflect on then? And then same thing at 80, right? You're kind of the tail end in the season of winter, and it's like, okay, you know, I did it the right way. You know, having those as kind of a pendulum, a measuring stick, is if you can kind of think about these decisions and my 8 and 80-year-old self would be proud of me because, I think it's a great way to kind of take ourselves out of the moment and what we're facing here and now that, you know, we sometimes get kind of wrapped up in from the bigger picture.
Absolutely. It's been a great conversation. It's been a pleasure talking with you. And so it's kind of just like moving us to wrap up, you know, what would you say is your probably, if you could only take one takeaway from today's conversation, what do you think that takeaway would be?
Wow. There's a lot of them. I think to just find joy and laughter in it, right? And you kind of cited a lot of great references, whether it's Marcus Aurelius and Meditations. I think just trying to find that joy and that levity in life is super, super important. You know, I know we get away from it and distracted a lot of the times. We take ourselves and life so seriously. But just sit back and just kind of take stock of where you are and find gratitude in that.
Yeah, I think for me, my takeaway is really just make sure that like you've settled and find your peace, even if the situation isn't good, and then jump into the river and just know that like you're going to be okay. Like the river is going to take you places and you're going to feel all these things and it's going to be a lot. But when you come out, you know, it's going to be a beautiful thing to enjoy, and you're not going to be the same person as when you entered the river. And so it is about surrendering to the current, surrendering control, and living life and enjoying those moments and doing the things that are meaningful and fulfilling and lead to a better life and helping others as a byproduct of that. But where can people find you at, Chase?
Find me on LinkedIn, Chase Friedman. Would love to kind of connect with anybody who is going through some similar seasons. And then also on our website, you can check us out, vanquishmediagroup.com.
Sounds good. Well, it was a pleasure having you on. To you guys listening out there, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Again, it is really important that we have these conversations and we talk about the alignment of how do we live better lives that as a byproduct impact other people? How do we turn out the noise? How do we find in the stillness of our mind, you know, what is good and where we're able to help and live lives as great stewards of change and do things for ourselves and for our families and the people we want to serve and grow in those ways. I mean, how do we look at everything as an opportunity to be something more? And how do we also prioritize in the end what matters most You guys know how we close it out. Fortune favors the bold.
That concludes today's episode of The Isaac Velez Show. If you gained any value from today, we'd be grateful if you share the episode and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you were looking to get more involved with us, visit our website, www.isaacantoniovelez.com, and follow us on Instagram for daily content. See you in the next episode.